This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Oh, here we are, getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. It'll be a week from today, by the way. A week from tonight, more specifically. NFL draft in Detroit, Rock City. Whew, we're getting closer to the draft. Guess what? The Pellies, they're going to be playing in the play-in tournament elimination game tomorrow night as well. Will they have the guy who put them on his back against the Lakers? No, they won't. Can the Pellies persevere and actually get to a playoff series? We got that going on. We got Major League Baseball as well. Houston Astros played yesterday. In many regards, they played well. In many regards, they did not play well. Got that. Got Cajuns baseball, LSU baseball, softball, table tennis, pickleball, James Mesh's hair to talk about, Dawson Iserlow, what $20 word did he learn at Florida State? We're going to cover it all for you. Welcome into RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. It's a deluxe edition of our show. So much to get to.
It's actually a full show today.
It's a full show today. No Astros invading in on our time slot, Dawson. We said no thank you. Take a day off.
And they did.
And they need to.
Some would argue they've taken a few days off that weren't scheduled. But look, the Astros, I had a checklist for them, and they did everything except one, which was win a game. And I wasn't greedy. I just wanted them to win one out of the three.
The hardest thing to do.
But if you'll remember, and I actually, here's the funny thing, I was going to pull the exact clip of me giving out my checklist for them, but they didn't achieve it, so it wasn't worth doing all the extra work to find it. But I'll tell you what it was here in summary. It was have every starter go at least four innings because they had, of course, been roughed up in the previous series and the starting pitching was a disaster. That happened. Then I said, don't give up more than five runs or more than four runs, a five or more run inning in a single inning throughout this series because they were doing too much of that. They listened to that one as well. They didn't give up any of those. And then my last one was win just one game out of the three. They did everything except win the one game out of the three. And that was arguably the most important. So either way, it's okay. I have a column coming out today. It'll talk about the Astros, where they are, some historical perspective. Here's a little clue. They've never been in this position before in their seven-year run of dominance in the American League, but they've been very close. So there's a little bit of concern on one end, but a little bit of we've kind of been there before on the other. I'll explore some of those issues and some of the real causes for concern and why it may not be time to find the panic button just yet, but we might not be all that far away.
And where can the folks find that column later on today, my friend?
ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com will be the exclusive location of that.
It's going to be well written. I can tell you that. It's going to be well written. There's going to be some words in there that you're going to have to pull out the thesaurus and go, well, what does that mean?
Well, I like
because to write Dawson is an intelligent young man. But he's going to make you better because of it.
It's a little bit of an old writing technique I learned, writing to the audience. And so I think a lot of, there's a place for those words. This article's not going to be, it's not going to blow you away. I think it's going to be pretty standard English. Nothing crazy.
Pretty standard English. So we got so much to get to. You know we love to hear from you as well. Mike's Marine Hotline, by the way, is always open on RP3 D'Lo Mesh. We love to hear from you. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. But who do you got coming up today? We haven't even talked to it's so jam-packed we'd even let you know who was coming on the program today. Dawson, can you do the listeners a solid since your boy RP3 dropped the ball here? Can you step up?
Jimmy G from LC, let's get a little update on the McNeese Cowboys and Cowgirls. Some disappointing results for the baseball team over the weekend, and they kind of got back on the right track. We'll talk to him about that. The softball team kind of keeps rolling along. We know that they're the clear-cut favorites in the Southland. And then Les East, Crescent City Sports, big week, 1 week from the draft, so we'll get his Saints draft perspective. And, of course, we got to ask him about those Pelicans, Zion Williamson. I've got a question to ask him about the urgency related to his injury, and I'll explain that a little bit more when we get to Les's, our conversation with Les. But that'll be at just about 12:35. So
there we go.
Jimmy
there
G and Les both at the bottom of each hour.
Boom.
Of the show.
Two heavy hitters for you today. That's what we're delivering, okay? But right now, we got to start off our show like we always do. It's time to call up, order up our today's specials.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans, but they can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces. Order up. Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D-Lo, and Mesh.
I'll go first, and I'll start off with the Houston Astros. Now, am I wearing my 2021 World Series quarter zip from my Atlanta Braves today? Yes. Do I get great satisfaction, Astro fan, for my Braves coming into your house and getting their first sweep in the state of Texas in more than two decades? Yes. Do I take great satisfaction that, you know, our ace is out for Tommy John and we have another guy that's got a broken, you know, bone and we're banged up too and yet we still found a way to win? Yeah, of course. But I'm not talking about me today. I'm not talking about the Atlanta Braves. I'm talking about your Houston Astros. I know you're upset today, but listen to Papa Parch. I know you're down. I know the sky is falling. I understand, to Dawson's point, the illustrious D to the low, that, hey, you really would have not wanted to be swept at home. Okay, that's reasonable. I understand your frustration. And losing a game that you should have won yet again is frustrating because that's a game that you simply gave the Bravos two errors, not optimal. The young man who's manning first base, whose batting average is now below his jersey number, and who's on an all-time historic Maldonado type of performance at the dish, worse than that. Also committed a error that let a run score, which is not optimal. We can
I won't put him on that. That one was a tough play.
You get paid to play first base. You got to make that play. Okay. I get it. I get it. We want to do the disclaimer. You know, it's a tough play. Yeah,
but
it's
was
a tough
ridiculous
play.
Hop. I don't think you can expect any major leaguer to make that play. But it's the compounding issues of him not doing anything else that made everyone get more mad at that.
Well, I mean, it's another screw up. Right? Last time I checked, the Major League Baseball official scorebook ruled that an error, correct?
Which I think is tough error. But anyway,
I'm just saying facts, right? It was ruled an error, correct? There you go. Which means that's an error on the fielder, which means that's a mistake. That's a screw up. There we go. All right. There we go. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way. So I have a few things here. And we can focus in on the starting first baseman that you're paying all the money to not hit and not field properly. That's fine. We can do that. I feel like we had the same conversation about him last year as well. So there you go. And didn't we have the same conversation the prior year with Yuli there, who was struggling at the plate to start the season before he turned things around that year as well? So I get it. There's a little... Can't we just figure out first base fatigue with the Astro fan base? I got you. All right. And is it optimal that the Astros have an ERA of 6.62 from the eighth inning on, which, by the way, is the worst in Major League Baseball this year? No, that's dreadful. The bullpen is awful. Awful. Ryan Pressly looks lost. You started seeing chinks in the armor last year. It's carried over to this year. Him not even having to be the closer has not gone well. He looks bad. He does. He just looks bad. He looks lost. Hader, you think you're going to figure him out eventually. You're paying him the most money that's ever been given to a relief pitcher in Major League Baseball history for him to give up runs and to give up hits and to not get outs. So, the bullpen is... Been trash is a nice way of describing that. And I get it. Bullpen's been trash. Your overpaid first baseman can't hit, nor can he field anymore. You're committing errors in games. And the fact that your team is 6-14 overall and You've been outscored 29-4 in the eighth and ninth innings. By the way, that stat is courtesy of our guy Brian Lalima, friend of the show, joins us on Mondays. Not optimal either, right? Bullpen, bad. First baseman, bad. McCormick not hitting either, bad. Right? The skipper keeps talking about the back of the baseball card, which you're tired of hearing about, bad. I almost brought a baseball card today for that purpose. Would have been amazing. And I get it. But it's 19 games in. Correct? Right, Dawson?
We're 20, but yes.
20, sorry. We're 20 games into the season. 20. How many games is in a regular season in Major League Baseball, Dawson? Tell the folks.
162.
So there's 160. So we have 100. Let me see if I understand this math properly, because sometimes math ain't mathing for your boy, RP3. If I subtract 20 from 162, that means there's still 142 games left on the regular season schedule. Yes?
Yes.
Gold star for...
Oh, take that. Breathe. Just breathe. Yes, they're last in their division. But here's the silver lining, Astro fan. Jose Altuve, Dawson, you can join him on this. Still playing well, right?
Certainly is.
We saw some guys get some home runs last night. We got some guys that get some necessary hits, right? Which was a step in the right direction. And you have a veteran team. You know Altuve is going to be good. You know Alvarez is the second best slugger in Major League Baseball. The top is Aaron Judge. Sorry, Astro fan, it is. It's the guy who wears the pinstripes. He's the best slugger in baseball. But Alvarez is number two. There's nothing wrong with that. So you still got Altuve. You still got Alvarez. And guess who's coming back to the big league roster for Friday's game in the nation's capital? Mr. Cade Upton. He's coming back. So you got reinforcements coming. You're not going to have to worry about depending on Spencer Arrigetti and Hunter Brown and J.P. France. And J.P. pitched okay yesterday. You got Verlander coming back. You're going to have some of those other pitchers coming back. It's 142 games left here, people. Yes, has it been an atrocious start? Are you frustrated? Are you embarrassed by your team? Yeah, absolutely. But here's the other thing. Not only are you having reinforcements coming off the IL, your division is straight hot fire garbage. No one wants to win it. The Rangers, the defending World Series champions, who, by the way, are dealing with injury issues themselves, they're 10-9. That's your division leader. The Angels, 9-9. Seattle, 9-10. Oakland, 8-11. And the Astros are right there. If they're still at the bottom of the division when we're at this point in the middle of May, then I think it's time to start being worried and hitting the panic button and burning your Astros memorabilia. But Stros fan, just pump the brakes, take a deep breath, and enjoy the fact that the Stros aren't playing today. That's all.
There you go. A team that isn't playing today either, but played yesterday's Louisiana Raging Cajuns. And there's a lot different tune here being sung by Cajuns fans. So a lot of people in this area, double Cajuns, Astros, you got one team that's rolling. The Louisiana Raging Cajuns got to 30 before 10 last night. Robe always talked about, you know, some of those milestones, and 30 before 10 wasn't even always the one. I believe he used to say a lot about 30 before 15.
30
right?
before 15 is what he would say.
Well, they've gotten 30 before 10, largely due to the fact that they've won 21 of their last 22 baseball games. The Louisiana Raging Cajuns, once upon a time, were 9-8 on the season, kind of in that no man's land. What is this team's going to be? What's the identity? The pitching staff maybe isn't what we thought. The lineup struggling. They have turned it on, and they have never turned it off since then. And that was after that Arkansas State loss that put them at 9-8. They have now won 21-22, the only loss being the LA Tech midweek game. Last night, they dominated Southeastern 8-1. Southeastern threw some of their weekend arms. They threw some of their real legit guys, and it didn't matter. Blake McGehee was dominant on the mound himself, went five innings of shutout baseball. Jack Martinez came out of the pen and looked really sharp as well. You even got Murphy Brooks to toss you the last couple innings there and close the deal. And the offense keeps rolling. Connor Higgs hit two balls out of the yard. So all that sets up for a preview against the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, the preseason favorites in the Sun Belt, a team that has a lineup that is Omaha-esque, but do they have enough pitching to support it? They've been a little up and down this year, but still find themselves ranked in the top 25. They're 9-6, which, believe it or not, is good for tied for second place with five teams in the Sun Belt, but they are five games behind the Cajuns. So if anyone's going to run down Louisiana to win the conference regular season title, it has to start this weekend with Coastal. So if you're Louisiana, trying to thwart that effort. And some interesting things I dug into here. We know the Chanticleers are a pretty good squad, 25-11 overall. They're 19-4 at home, only 6-7 on the road. So, of course, they do have the benefit of playing at home against the Cajuns this weekend. They've given up 59 home runs this season. Louisiana's given up 22. Now, big factor for that, the ballpark. Teague Moore Field at Russo Park plays pretty big. We know it. It's a pitcher-friendly ballpark. Over in Coastal, the ball flies out like it's Yankee Stadium. So that's something to factor in here. Despite the dominance of Cajun starters of late, three pitchers with an ERA at or below two, they're going to have to try and manage the long ball. Now, Coastal's hit 61. Louisiana's hit 45. Even not playing in a hitter-friendly ballpark, they're not all that far off on the home run numbers. Last number that I thought was really interesting for previews purposes, Coastal Carolina behind the dish has a catcher who can really thwart the running game. They've only been run on 14 times. Opposing teams are 8-14 against them in the stolen base category. That is a very small number. So they do a good job, both pitchers and catchers, of limiting the running game. And we know the Cajuns love to run, not as much as last year, but they still like to steal a lot of bases. So who wins out in that battle could be pretty important in what we figure to be some fairly high-scoring games. So if you're used to 2-0, 2-1 games that you've been seeing at Russo Park recently, try and readjust yourself for maybe some 7-5, 10-8 type ball games over in Myrtle Beach, and we'll see if the Cajuns can keep rolling the way they've been rolling the last 2 months of the season.
And I'll keep mine brief for today's special. I look towards the NBA play-in tournament. Of course, on Tuesday, you saw the Western side. The Pelicans ended up losing to the Lakers, so now they have to play again tomorrow against the Kings, who had eliminated the Warriors. But then last night, it was the Eastern side of the play-in bracket. Of course, it was the Miami Heat versus the Philadelphia 76ers, and then the Chicago Bulls against the Atlanta Hawks. The first game, however, was Philly versus Miami, and it started off pretty slow. By the midway through the first quarter, it was only 9-4, so there wasn't a lot of baskets being made. But then as you got more and more into the game, they started to pick up the pace. More buckets were being made. And by halftime, you saw Miami up 51-39. Philly's offense just looked very lackluster for the most part. And Jimmy Butler, throughout the game, he plays a lot like a free safety and a center fielder when it comes to defense. Because if you throw a lollipop ball up there, whether you're doing an inbound pass, you're trying to throw it from one side of the court to the other, and Jimmy's on that side, it feels like there's a good chance he's going to end up getting a steal. And he ended up getting five of them on the night and helped get a majority of his points on that side of the floor, being able to get easy transition baskets. But as you got into the second half, the hero that we did not expect at all, the guy that I thought was 47 at this point in his career, I forgot that he was still in the league. Nick Batum, of all people, helped save Philadelphia with 20 points off of the bench. He was knocking down three after three after three. And even he got a crazy tip-in layup that I still watch that highlight back, and I still don't know how he ended up making it. But because of his efforts, because of Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid in the starting lineup, they were able to come back in the second half and take down the Miami Heat 105-104. While you look at the Chicago Bulls, they just easily dominated the Atlanta Hawks 131-116. You saw a career high from Kobe White, of all people. He ended up with 42 points. Then you saw 20-point efforts from Nikola Vucevic and DeMar DeRozan, an absolute veteran, as they take down the Atlanta Hawks by 15. You saw DeJounte Murray. He tried his best with 30 points. But Trae Young, he had a lackluster performance. You see, he had 22 points by the end of it all. He had 10 assists. But for the most part, he only had 9 points or so through about three and a half quarters of it all, and a majority of his points came from the free throw line. So, it overall, you look at it, now Philadelphia moves on. They'll be the 7th seed, and now Miami is going to have to take on Chicago on Friday as well when the Pelicans have to take on the Kings. But the big issue for Miami is the fact that Jimmy Butler exited the game last night against Philly with an MCL injury, and he's expected to miss several weeks. So at this point, you almost feel like Miami, they're cooked at this point. You feel like Chicago is going to be able to move on because all their guys, even though Alex Caruso also is going to be out with this injury, an injury after missing last night as well in that game, feels like Chicago is going to move on because Bam Adebayo doesn't feel like an absolute offensive threat. And Tyler Hero, he looks good at points, but you can tell compared to last year that this is not the same Miami squad. And if you don't have your best player, Jimmy Butler, you just are not going to be able to make it into the actual playoffs, and you're probably going to get eliminated more likely than not. We're going to go ahead and take a quick timeout, but when we come back, we're going to have more RP3 D'Lo and Mesh and react to each other's today's specials. You're listening to ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
Welcome back to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as you're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. Let's update you on the poll question of the day and introduce it to you for the first time on our show. We had asked you on Facebook and on X, now that we're 1 week away from the draft, who do you think the Saints will pick in the first round? At least what position, not specifically a player, what position? The options that we gave you were offensive tackle, someone on the defensive line, maybe a wide receiver, or do you think they go in a completely different direction? Unsurprisingly, at 92% of the votes, the people have said offensive tackle. However, for the final 8%, it's a split. 4% had said wide receiver, and then the other 4% had said other. So, no votes so far for the defensive line.
And that's what I'm interested by, and that's why I phrased D-line as one of the choices, because the Saints have been so enamored by them for so long now. But I do agree, there's just no way you can do it. The amount that you've invested in Chase Young from a financial standpoint as a signee, the amount you've invested in first-round pick Brian Brzee, second-round pick Isaiah Foskey, first-round pick Peyton Turner, nice acquisition Carl Granderson. There's just really no way you can make another massive first-round investment on a player at that position when you already have so many investments. And again, this is a business. So that's why I put it on there, and I think people are not taking the bait. So good job, Saints fans out there, recognizing that I just don't think there's any way they do it. But again, if a guy like Dallas Turner's there, how much would Mickey Loomis, how much restraint would he have to practice? You know what I mean? I'm interested to see how that would go. But I think offensive tackle's the clear-cut way they need to go. And past that, I'm more and more excited about them potentially taking a nice pass-catching receiver in the second round, if that's where
possibly
they want to go.
One from the city of Opelousas.
Could be. Could be.
Just saying. Keon Coleman's going to be that guy that's not going to be drafted in the first round, more than likely, that's going to be impact player that's going to come right off the board in the second round. And because his 40 time wasn't blistering fast. And it happens every single year. Think of Mike Thomas. He didn't have a super fast 40 time. He was prolific. Didn't have a fast 40 time.
Ended up being in the second round.
Well, and honestly, one of the reasons Coleman's falling too is he's just in a really receiver-rich class. But that means he's got an opportunity, like you said, to fall. And teams also, like the Saints potentially, could get him. You're going to get him at a lower cost because, remember, the slotted values, you pay first-round picks less. Now, if you take him in the second instead of the first, the one downside, you don't get that fifth-year option, which we know matters a lot, keeping guys around without having to sign them to massive deals. And we know the Saints are always frugal. But you could potentially, I think, add a guy who contributes right away, as you mentioned. Now, if you brought in a guy like Keon Coleman, what does that mean for someone like A.T. Perry, who maybe has a similar skill set, but doesn't have as much investment put in him? I don't know. We'll get to that point if we get there. But I think tackle's clearly where they need to go in the first. And unless something really weird happens in the first portion of this draft, I think it's where they will go. And then after that, I'm hearing options. I don't think it has to be a receiver, but that's certainly one of the places they could choose to go.
I want to go ahead because I know we're talking about our specials and talking about the poll question. Troy is a fan of the show, friend of the show. And I'm going to take issue with something that he just tweeted literally 44 seconds ago. So we're going to respond to this in real time. Can you ask Dawson why is he so surprised Zion is hurt again? Zion is the Michael Thomas of the NBA. He hates to play, always hurt. That's not accurate. Like, I understand the frustration, and it's easy to pile on Zion, and I've been highly critical of Zion. That is a cat that wanted to stay in the game the other night, and if it wasn't for him scoring 40 points and getting 10 rebounds, they wouldn't even have had a shot And if he would have stayed in the game, they probably would have won. I think Zion has proven this year that he's dedicated. You saw him. He's been in the best shape of his career this year. He's played the most games this year. He's in the best shape. And we've talked about him playing his best basketball. The fact that he has possibly a torn hamstring and may be out for weeks, is going to be out or is going to be reevaluated for weeks, which means if the Pelicans do, is when somebody's out for a couple weeks. When somebody's out for a couple weeks, what do? That means they're going to be reevaluating again. So he's probably not going to see the rest of the floor. Zion proved to me, and he should have proved to Troy, that this is a guy that loves to play the game of basketball, and he played it hard, and he played his best basketball he's played since he was at Duke this year for the Pelicans. I don't agree with that take whatsoever. I just don't. I think it's off base, and it's wrong to say Zion doesn't want to play when you've seen him play his best basketball all year and play the most games he's played. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was surprised that take happened at all. When people say, when he gets hurt in the fourth quarter of a massive game that he's got 40 points in and is kind of willing his team to stay in it, I was just surprised in general that people thought, oh, he was content to leave the game. Like, he was like, oh, I pulled a hamstring.
You saw him be emotional, upset that they were taking him out of the game. Look, has Zion been committed in the past? No. Has it been fair to openly question whether or not he is dedicated to play the game of basketball in years past? Yes. Has there been tons of weird stuff involving him? Yes. But this year, he was a model teammate, a model player, best shape of his life, and played his tail off night in, night out when he was out there. You got to change your perception of what he was 3 years ago to what he is now. I'm sorry. Let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water quickly. David wants to chime in. David, we got about a minute, but it's yours, brother. What's on your mind?
Oh, that's fine. I agree with you. I can't disagree with you in what you said. But the problem is that you've got some of the media and a lot of the podcasts, regular, you know, talking heads, whatever, who put out these narratives, which are mostly false narratives about certain players. And Zion happens to be one of these players. And then the fans buy into it like a bunch of sheep. You know, not all fans, but many do. So when it comes time for Zion to, you know, either stay in New Orleans with the Pelicans or leave, and he leaves, they should just all remain silent. Because look at how many Pels fans jumped on him because of some idiots put out a false narrative that he did not want to stay in the game. The man has a strained hamstring. Have you ever had a strained hamstring? I have. It hurts.
It really hurts.
You can't run. You can't jump. You can walk, but you can't run, you can't jump. Basketball requires a lot of running and jumping.
That is correct. Now, to be fair, David, I couldn't really run or jump before, but yes, but you're correct. And look, and that's the thing. I get it. What Zion was, that's why I said it. What Zion was 3 years ago is not who he is right now. Appreciate the phone call, brother. Thank you for that. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll shift gears a little bit. We'll circle back to the Zion stuff because I've been seeing it. And look, Troy's entitled to his opinion. I just don't agree with it. That's all. I just don't agree with it. When we come back, we'll shift gears. We'll talk McNeese with our buddy Jim Gazzolo from the Lake Charles American Press. We'll also get his thoughts about the Chicago White Sox drawing 1,000 people for a doubleheader yesterday.
If that.
That's all coming up next right here on RP3 D-Lo and Mesh.
Here we go. Let's head around the state we call the Boot to find out what's happening at the collegiate athletic programs in Louisiana. This is Campus Check-In. Today, we check in with the McNeese Cowboys.
And we do so with the king of all sports media in Lake Charles. He's an award winner, podcaster, writer, television personality, radio personality, old school newspaper reporter. He does it all. Things don't get done in the Chuck without his seal of approval. It's the great one. Jimmy G from LC. Jim Gazzolo joins us now. Good day, sir. How are you?
I'm great, Raymond. And this place has been renamed. It's now Chuck Vegas.
Chuck Vegas, he says. Outstanding. Bud, before we start talking about some McNeese Cowboys, a little baseball softball action, you want to do a deep dive about the fan support for your Chicago White Sox? I saw, a few hundred people showed up for a doubleheader the other day there at Old Comiskey or New Comiskey or whatever they're calling it, Guarantee Field or whatever.
That's Guaranteed Rate. Field.
My apologies.
I think that's pretty good for you're getting pretty good bang for your buck with when you only have three wins.
Fair enough. By the way, I would pay good money for you and I to see the White Sox, this year's White Sox team, for us to go to a game in person and just be in the stands. I would love just to witness you for 9 innings just be so disgruntled about your White Sox, your Southsiders. It would be worth the plane ticket up to Chicago.
I got no comment for that. It would not be worth your... Let me put it this way. In all honesty.
Okay.
I like the young pitchers. I do not trust the organization. I do not trust that they will do things that will be good and get people well and make them better. So I don't think our development is very good. But I will say this. I like the young pitchers. And that's about it.
There you go, bud. There's something positive, huh? See?
I always look for the positive. You know that.
Oh, you're a ray of sunshine all the time. Not grumpy at all.
I have a little news for you.
Break some news for us right here live. 11:41 on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh.
Not huge. I think we've discussed it a little bit. I can confirm that McNeese basketball will play Mississippi State in a neutral site. I believe it will be Tupelo. That has been signed.
Oh, there
so that is. That is one game that they don't that they actually got scheduled.
Some breaking news, and they're taking part. Aren't they taking part in that island tournament too? Hasn't that been confirmed? Right?
Yeah, that's the period. Yeah. That was written about weeks ago.
Yeah. Look. If you're not paying attention to the Lake Charles AmericanPress.com, you're doing yourself a disservice, Dawson.
That's the Paradise Jam. They will be three games in at the Virgin Islands, and that's over the Thanksgiving week.
I can't wait to see your coverage live from that via the beach. So let's.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that too. That ain't happening. You know that.
I want to talk about the baseball team. It's been a struggle this season, as we know. They get swept at home versus Incarnate Word, and they're giving up a ton of runs, right? They gave up a total of 28 runs in a three-game set against Incarnate Word over Military Weekend there at the Joe. They did get back on track a little bit, earned a hard-fought victory against Sam Houston on Tuesday. They're gearing up for a three-game set at UNO this weekend. Give us the things that you feel good about Justin Hill's team, and then give us the things that you still are extremely worried about his team as it is April 18th.
Well, their biggest concern is they don't have power. So when their ballpark plays small, when it's wind's blowing out, they don't have the ability to get the easy runs with the three-run homers. That's the biggest issue for them. They out-hit Incarnate Word twice during the weekend. They just didn't have the power numbers. And that is what kills you if that park is playing small. When it plays big, when the wind's blowing in, they can compete, and that's why they're 500. But that's the biggest thing, is just the runs that used to come the last couple of years in bunches don't. They have to struggle to get their runs, struggle to get guys on base, and they don't come up with big hits, and that's a bad combination. They're still trying to find their, you know, we're pretty deep into the season. They're still trying to find out a balanced lineup. Pitching-wise, their starting pitching has not been bad. Their weekend starting pitching has been pretty good, been pretty consistent if you throw out the Texas A&M and the Arkansas series. The problem has been the middle relief and getting there. Against Lamar, they got walked off twice. Now, one was tied and won 11 innings. The second game, they blew a lead in the ninth inning. That's the best team in the league and 23rd in the country in one poll. They competed with them, but Lamar's not a big hitting team. In this league, and this will be the challenge this weekend, they play Mitchell Samford, who leads the league in home runs at 12. New Orleans has a smaller ballpark. They can hit the power. They got five guys hitting over 300. Scoring runs against them will be the key. Can they score enough runs to compete?
So, Jim, you know, along those same lines, it's interesting because the conference, you know, a week ago this time, Incarnate Word was sitting at the bottom with with McNeese, and now they're all the way in the top three of the league because they got a big-time series sweep over the Cowboys. So are you still of the mindset that this could turn around for them with a good weekend over at Maestri Field, or do you think this team just isn't as deep as some of the teams at the top of the conference?
I don't think they have enough hitting to be a top-tier team. I think they are going to be competing for one of the last spots in the tournament. Justin Hill's made the tournament every year in his 11 years, except the COVID year when they canceled it. I think they're going to struggle to get there. That's going to be, you know, it's funny that it's them and Southeastern at the bottom of the conference, when for years it was them and Southeastern that was at the top of the conference. It just flipped. And I think that's their biggest thing is I don't know if they're going to score enough runs to – they're not going to get into the race for the title. Can they get into the postseason tournament, I think, is the bigger question. I think they can do that because of their pitching, but they're going to have to win a series at some point in time, and they haven't won a series yet.
And switching over to softball, you know, we know the situation's different there. The Cowgirls are comfortably in first place. They got another midweek win over Sam Houston last night. For them, is this going to be one of those situations where it's as simple as focusing all their energy on the conference tournament, or do you still think with the RPI, last I checked, being in a decent spot, that they've got a chance to be in that at-large consideration, maybe take some pressure off the conference tournament?
Here's the problem. They went out and they swept Commerce last weekend, run ruled them twice, and went from 39 to 49.
Yep.
In some of the ratings. There's just no real points available in the rest of the conference to kind of bump up no matter what you do, except when they play Southeastern. And when they play Southeastern, that'll be for the conference title in regular season. Then they've got to go play that'll be here. Then they got to go play them there in the tournament. I think it's last year, I think they would have gotten in as a second team. I'm not sure they get in this year as a second team. They don't have the big wins they had last year when they beat Washington, when they beat some other people. They don't have those wins on their resume right now, so I don't know if they're going to be able to get enough points there because the conference isn't going to get them any.
Is it an opportunity for them if they were to beat the Cajuns next week? Do you think there's any RPI boost there, or do you think it just, like you said, it's just going to come down to what they do against Southeastern?
I got a feeling it'll come down to what they do against Southeastern in the tournament. But, yeah, that's if they have any chance at all of getting an at-large, that's a must-win.
And how do you think, I know it's an early preview, but how do you think they match up with Southeastern when the time comes?
Well, it's the same thing as it's always been for them is they seem to be do the little things that Southeastern doesn't do to beat them. And that seems to be the thing this year is the same exact thing. Southeastern's going to have the better overall record, but not play the level of competition. McNeese is used to the close games, and they seem to win the close games because of who they've played early in the year. That's always been their key. That's how they won it last year in the walk-off home run in the championship game. That's what kills Southeastern. And Southeastern never has enough wins or enough quality games to get the at-large, where McNeese does on the other end. So I think it's the same exact thing. Did Southeastern learn from the last couple of years and they're close? Maybe. But until I see them beat them, I'm going to say no.
Well, Jim, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for catching us up, and we will speak with you again next week.
Greatness.
Yeah, I really want to thank you from Chuck Vegas here on the letting me talk about the White Sox.
Absolutely.
There it is. Hey, bud, next time I'm in Chicago, you gave me a great recommendation on some deep dish pizza a couple years ago when I went. I got to see your White
Sox.
There was. And I got to see your White Sox only paid $8 for a ticket. I just walked right up, and they said, sure, you want to be here? Here you go. So maybe next time
the game starts when you get here. What time do you get here?
Yeah, there it is. So I want to thank you for that, bud, and thank you for everything that you do for the Chuck.
Oh, yeah. Chuck Vegas.
Chuck Vegas. There it is. It's Jimmy G from LC joining us. Our buddy from Chuck Vegas. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll get an update on the poll, but I want to talk about an exchange that occurred yesterday between a man who is paid to be a professional reporter and the face of women's basketball, and how cringeworthy it was. Yay. That'll be next, right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need.
This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Wrapping up hour number one of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we broadcast live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. Updating you on that poll question of the day we had asked you on Facebook and on X. Now that we're just a week away from the draft, what do you think the Saints will do with that first round pick? Still, 88% of you are saying that they're going to go offensive tackle. Not a specific one, because there's plenty to choose from, but they're going to go with an offensive tackle. About 8% of you have said other, and the last 4% have said wide receiver. Still no votes for defensive line.
That's dangerous, because we know how much they love drafting defensive linemen. And we sit here and we talk about it's offensive tackle, it's offensive tackle, it's offensive tackle. They're going to draft an offensive tackle. They're going to draft an offensive tackle. But, man, if there is a pass rusher that they love that plays D-line, Dawson, it would not stun me whatsoever if Mickey Loomis says, hey, let's take that guy.
Why, Tulatu, you got some injury concerns? Come on down.
Oh, especially if a guy's got injury concerns. That's that guy would be there, Huckleberry, in a heartbeat. Keep those votes coming on our poll question of the day. I want to touch on an exchange that happened yesterday that was absolutely cringeworthy. So we know Caitlin Hart does the little heart thing, right?
Clark, yeah.
Yeah, Caitlin Clark, thank you. Does the heart thing to her family, right? And, yeah, she puts it up, does the heart thing. And so in her introductory press conference as the new face of the Indiana Fever, great name, by the way, she's interacting with a reporter from the Indianapolis Star. And she looks to him and goes, the reporter does the heart sign to Caitlin while he's down, supposed to be asking questions. She's up at the podium, or at the table, rather. He does the heart to her. And the exchange goes like this. Caitlin goes, you like that? And he goes, I like that you're here, which already is weird. Okay. And she goes, yeah, I do that at my family after every game. Okay, all right. So it's a weird way to get some sort of interesting answer from the new face of the franchise. Okay. And his response was, start doing it to me and we'll get along just fine. For everyone out there listening, okay, if you're an aspiring broadcaster or reporter or blogger or podcaster, or if you're just, you know, a human being, I'll just lower the bar that way. Don't interact with females this way. It's not difficult. Don't be creepy old guy. Don't be the guy that makes things weird. Okay? If you wouldn't do the little heart thing to say, I don't know, LeBron James, or Tyrese Halliburton, to make it more Indiana-centric since he plays for the Pacers, then you don't do it to the female athlete. And then you don't say, well, if you do that to me, we'll get along just fine. Gross, gross, gross. Be better. Don't be weird. Don't be a creeper. It ain't that hard, fellas. That's all I got to say about that.
I don't have anything to add. We're just going to end hour number one.
Yeah, I'm ready to move on from this subject. I'm ready to move on. We're going to be talking with Les East in hour number two.
We will. 12:35, it'll be Les East. It'll be a loaded up hour number two. A lot to talk about, including, while we're on this topic of women's basketball, a former Tiger has announced where she is moving on to. Not changing her color scheme all that much. That's a hint. We'll talk about that to begin hour number two. This is RP3, D'Lo and Mesh.
This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory.
Here is RP3, D'Lo and Mesh.
This just in, breaking news. Dawson Isalo is getting older.
I mean, every day I am, but I don't think today any more than yesterday or the day before.
We just did some math, because I'm a big mathin' guy. No, I'm not. We have horror stories of math and Raymond in school, elementary, junior high, high school, junior college, university.
Just every level of education.
Every level.
We could do algebraic equations, quadratic formulas.
Please.
Trigonometric measurements, whatever you want to do.
I think I'd rather have a root canal. but we did some math. The Astros have been to 7 straight ALCS appearances, which is just phenomenal, right? 4 World Series trips in those 7 years and winning it twice. The last time the Astros were not good, you were still in high school.
Correct. And
think about it that way.
Funny story that I'll share now. When I was a senior in high school, I took a class that was a college class that I took in high school. It was like a dual enrollment type thing, but it was on my high school campus.
Smarty. A little smarty taking some college prep courses, huh? Some credit courses while in high school.
It was through SLU. So the Lions, you know, I did attend a class at Southeastern, technically. Attended a couple at UNL.
So why were you too good to attend Southeastern Louisiana or the University of New Orleans? Why? Why were you too good for those two programs?
That's what I'm saying. I technically attended both of them, just in briefer stints. Either way, I attended UNO and Southeastern at the exact same time, and high school, all three. Anyway.
Someone's an overachiever.
No, it wasn't that big a deal. Took a speech class.
Flex.
So it was a speech class where you learned about public speaking. You did different types, you know, different oral assignments, different kind of, you know, these could be theses and whatever. Well, your final project was to basically come up with your own, as opposed to, you know, practicing speech techniques on prepared stuff or maybe working on little pieces of it. And so you had to do your own whole thing. And I gave a speech on why the Houston Astros would win the 2017 World Series. And I had my main purpose of my argument. I started with the Sports Illustrated article that had, of course, predicted it 4 years before when I was a freshman. And used that article along with kind of the upward trajectory they were on, the fact that they would use the 2016 playoffs as experience and all this stuff. And I gave an entire speech about it, and then they did win the World Series. And it was a cool moment. I shared it on social media at the time, and all my classmates were like, whoa, you were serious about that speech. And I was like, yeah, it was a real thing. That's why I gave it. And my teacher even from back then was like, you know, I honestly can't believe you were correct about almost everything you said in that speech. And I was like, well, that's why you should listen to me more, I guess. I don't know.
Just dunked on the teacher.
She was a great teacher. Shout out Miss Francis.
Oh, shout out to Miss Francis.
Yes.
Oh, shout out to her. I'm sure she's listening, right? She's probably listening on the mobile app. It's free.
I would imagine.
Free to download for Apple or Android devices, you know.
100%.
There it is. Hour one, we covered a lot of ground, right? We had our today's specials. I told you, stop worrying about the sky falling, about the Astros. There's still time for them to turn it around. Plus, the West is a dumpster fire right now. Yes, your first baseman is lost, and your relief pitching is the worst in Major League Baseball. But there's still time to figure it out. There's no shame in getting swept by the Atlanta Braves. So, just deal with that. We also talked a little play-in tournament for the NBA. We talked to McNeese Athletics and the Chicago White Sox with our buddy Jim Gozzolo of the Lake Charles American Press. That's hour one. Coming up here in hour number two, half an hour from right now, Les East from CrescentCitySports.com will be joining us to talk Saints. We're a week out from the NFL draft. And, of course, the Pels are playing in the play-in tournament. Win or go home situation tomorrow night in the big blender there at the Smoothie King Center as they take on the Sacramento Kings, trying to go undefeated against them for the entire season. If they win, they will clinch the 8th seed and play the Oklahoma City Thunder in the opening round of the Western Conference playoffs. So we've got a lot to talk to with Les East. But let's right now head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. Got someone that wants to talk NFL and NBA. Good day. What's your name, brother?
Hey, what's good? What you hear me?
Yeah, man, we can hear you. What's your name, bud?
This is Super Rasida from Detroit. I wanted to talk NFL and NBA.
Okay, what you got?
Okay, the two-headed monster over there, the Ravens. And then I wanted to talk Kaepernick after that. But the two-headed monster over there, which it is a two-headed monster over there, I'm talking about the Ravens because I feel like they're going to win the Super Bowl. That's my number one team. I think they need another two-headed monster over there. They're lacking in the receiver core. They're very much lacking. If they're going to get over that hump to be able to beat the Chiefs, whoever else, they need another two-headed monster over there. OBJ by himself is just not going to get it. You have to have, I say, bring in Antonio Brown and Hollywood Brown. If you bring in Antonio Brown and Hollywood Brown, can you imagine the competitiveness, the camaraderie between those two cousins over there to help out OBJ? So you have yourself almost like a three-headed monster. here's the key thing. I challenge anybody to put this theory down or show that this theory would not work. Antonio Brown, what did he do last when he was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? They won a Super Bowl, despite him getting into it with the coach. So I wanted to hear what you got to say about that, and then also the callers. And then as far as Kaepernick, I wanted to talk about Kaepernick as well. So did you you want to comment on that first, or you want me to talk about Kaepernick?
Well, with Hollywood Brown, that's not going to be a possibility because he's with the Kansas City Chiefs. That was the so he's there, so there's no way for them to do that. And OBJ is a free agent, so they have to still try to lock him to try to bring him back. So that scenario, I don't
said Antonio Brown. I said Antonio Brown first.
Yeah, but look, AB's not coming back to the league, man. No, there's no way. There's just no way.
How you figure that? Just because he took his jersey off and ran off the field?
Well, no, because he wasn't in the league last year. Like I think he's probably got a reputation, whether it's right or wrong. I think if teams were wanting to bring him in, they would have already brought him in. Like I think maybe the time has passed on him to be able to get another shot. I think it's one of those things where some people probably tried to kick the tires on him, so to speak, and then that didn't work out, even though he's immensely talented. I didn't hear a lot of interest from teams about him last year, so I doubt that he gets a call this year unless it's like an emergency situation. I think they would probably rather go after like Odell Beckham or somebody like that.
Hold on. I said the Ravens getting Antonio Brown. They already got Odell Beckham. He's not powerful enough. You need another powerful Hall of Fame receiver.
Well, time out. But OBJ's not under contract, man. That was a 1-year deal.
So, okay.
So,
what does that have to do with Antonio Brown? I'd rather have Antonio Brown than OBJ anyway, because what did Antonio Brown do for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I think they won a Super Bowl with him, right?
He also announced his retirement just the other day.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
He's come out of retirement. All you do is put the money signs in his face and say, hey, guess what, brother? We need you over here. At the Ravens, you want to win a Super Bowl? You need a two-headed monster over there. They have to have it over there in Baltimore because they're lacking in the receiver corps something terrible. So if you know them or somebody knows them, I'll put this out to the people, man. Hear what they got to say about this. Antonio Brown gives you a little bit of trouble. Who cares? As long as he can get you a Super Bowl, why not go and get the man? You know.
But
what I'm
he
saying?
Hasn't played since 21, man.
Off and ran off the field. Big deal.
But he hasn't played since 2021. Like he hasn't played since 2021. So he's been out of the league for.
When you're 30 something, bro. When you're 30 something, you're pretty much, if you're in shape, you're 20 something. That means nothing because he has not. That is one of the most lamest excuses.
But the NFL teams. But the NFL. All right, man. Thanks for the phone call, bud. I appreciate it. If you're gonna just yell and like talk over us, and we'll have a discussion, but that's not how we do things, man. So appreciate the phone call. Bless. Hope you have a great day. Like the NFL's telling you that they don't want Antonio Brown, like, because he hasn't played in the league since 2021. Like, he was out of the NFL in 2022, out of the NFL in 2023. No one's kicking the tires on him. Like, even if he's in peak physical condition, like T.O. used to be and some other guys, and Antonio Brown was a freak of nature. I make no bones about that. The NFL's telling you that they don't want him around. And that's how that is. It's got nothing to do with how I feel about Antonio Brown or how our caller felt about Antonio Brown. The NFL's telling you they don't want Antonio Brown around. That's just the reality of the situation. And I doubt they're going to give him a call now since he's announced his retirement. And just to clear up things, Hollywood Brown, the caller wanted the Ravens to re-sign OBJ, who's not under contract, wanted to bring Hollywood Brown and Antonio Brown and make it like a three-headed monster. Well, you're not going to get Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, because he's in Kansas City. And you still got to re-sign OBJ, and just Antonio Brown's not going to get signed. Like, unless there's an emergency. Like, I'm sure GMs and some of his former teammates have vouched for him to try to reach out to him and do all that other stuff. But that's just not how it's going to work. Like, it's just not. I'm not trying to be mean. I wish nothing but the best for AB. He was a great player, but that's just not like.
Yeah, I thought I was going to say Haley Van Lith went to TCU to start the segment. That's not where we went there, but that's what I teased at the end of the last hour. So there's no easy way to transition into that. But the former LSU guard has announced via the transfer portal, of course, that she will be attending TCU. It's interesting that she announces that because Haley Cavender, the former Miami Hurricane member, has also announced that she'll be transferring to TCU. So the Horned Frogs now have picked up two very popular guards in the world of women's basketball, as they now have Van Lith and Cavender. It'll be interesting to see. And I think the assumption is that Van Lith's going to go back to what she was as more of a scoring first two guard. And you try and take the ball out of her hands a little bit. We know Kim Mulkey tried to make it work, tried to make her into that kind of point guard style player who was going to handle things. But that's not exactly what worked out, right? And from that perspective, we know that LSU ended up struggling at times, and it was part of the reason that they maybe weren't as good this year as they initially wanted to be. Now, of course, as we talk about it, they made quite a run at the end, and Haley, you know, was a team player about it and did what she could.
She was a team player about it. She's going to be able to go to TCU, and they're going to allow her to do what she did with Louisville, where she was the number two guard, right? She was be able to be the shooter. And they're going to have Haley Van Lith, Haley Cavender, and they still have Sedona Prince as well, right? So they have a lot of dynamic playmakers there. Will it work? Maybe. But it is an interesting move there. But obviously it looks like she is going to a place where she can go back to being the Haley Van Lith that we saw that was an All-American scorer for Louisville.
Yeah, and it was also interesting when Kim Mulkey announced, or not announced, but kind of suggested at the end of the season that she would love to have her back, you know. And so I imagine some of those conversations were had. I imagine that they, you know, talked about what the role maybe could or couldn't change to. I wonder, too, if it became a situation where Haley had an idea of how she wanted to be used, and maybe Kim Mulkey either A, didn't think that made a lot of sense for LSU moving forward, or B, just didn't think Haley was going to thrive in that role again. Or maybe she said that was a possibility and Van Lith ultimately decided to leave anyway. I don't know what went into it all. But I do think it's interesting, and I wonder kind of if that would have worked out in a different world, right? Where, you know, the other thing that's about it is LSU had a couple of injuries at the beginning of the season that I think even necessitated it more to be Van Lith as the primary ball handler. And we know, you know, that Poa and that whole kind of dynamic at the point guard spot wasn't ever fully what they wanted it to be. But no, I think it's fascinating to see how this is going to work out with TCU and in the world of women's basketball now. You know, the way the transfer portal is, it's no different than the other sports and the men's sports and baseball and softball as well. You got some big time players moving around. So, you know, all in all, I think it's interesting. And, you know, we do end up having to take a timeout right here. But we got a lot more RP3, D'Lo and Mesh coming up, guys. We'll stay with us here. We're going to have something after the break that you're going to be ready for sure.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
So we got to clear up some stuff. Not about the first part of the last segment. We're going to let that go.
Just to clarify, once again, appreciate the phone call. Just to clarify, Odell Beckham Jr. is no longer under contract with the Baltimore Ravens. The Miami Dolphins, our guy Troy's team, has been flirting with bringing Odell to South Beach, even though that appears that it's cool. But Odell is a free agent. He's busy right now dating Kim Kardashian, I believe. But Odell is doing his thing. Okay, he's a free agent. Hollywood Brown is now with the Kansas City Chiefs, your two-time defending Super Bowl champs. Okay? And Antonio Brown has not played in the league since 2021.
Or has he shown any interest.
And has announced his retirement recently. So, just to clear that up.
Now.
But yes, you were talking about Haley Van Lith and the other Haley from Miami.
We did a whole deep dive there. I gave a lot more analysis than I thought I would, mainly just because I wanted to talk about something else, but also to clarify where Haley Van Lith was going to be playing alongside Haley Cavender, and we thought that was going to be big. It's not the case. And I imagine that was known to Haley Van Lith when she decided to transfer to TCU. Now that we're kind of picking up these puzzles, let me explain. Hannah Cavender and Haley Cavender, they are very famous on social media, and they have been for a while. Remember, they lost to LSU in Sweet 16 a couple years ago, and then they both announced after the season that they were taking a break from basketball. Kind of focusing, and again, they make a lot of money from what I understand doing
NIL,
the social media
and social
thing
media,
and endorsements and everything else. Well, it was made apparent a few months ago that Haley was coming back to basketball, and she entered her name in the transfer portal. She ultimately landed at TCU. We thought when Van Lith joined that they were joining forces. Well, it turns out Hannah Cavender, the twin sister of Haley, announced that she was going back to basketball as well last night and that she was going to return to play for Miami, the team she played for, that they both played for before this whole thing. Now, Haley, her twin, is announcing that she is also going back to Miami because she's playing with Hannah again. So there is one Haley going to TCU in summary, just Van Lith. The other Haley, Cavender, back in Miami, as is Hannah, the two twins. We'll be playing for the Hurricanes once again. I think
lots,
we have it all unpacked.
Lots of H's moving around there.
Yes.
Lot going on there. So there we go. That's our update. We haven't had a chance to touch on this and about the Louisiana Raging Cajun football team. Remember earlier this year where the game with New Mexico State, right? Those are the Aggies.
Yes.
Am I correct? Had been canceled. And the Brian Maggard scrambled, and they have replaced that game with the game at Wake Forest. Is that correct? Or am I thinking?
No, that was the Michigan State cancellation.
Michigan
State canceled. The New
Mexico State
games were supposed to be in previous years. They scrambled,
correct.
And I believe that was, I think maybe the Kennesaw State game was the New Mexico
yes.
State
cancellation.
Yes, there you go.
Yes, they replaced Michigan State. Michigan State backed out of playing the Cajuns this coming season. Instead, they're going to play at Wake. The New Mexico State backed out of their series as well. It was supposed to be, a 1-1?
Yeah, I think it was even like maybe a 2-2, but either way, yeah.
Yeah, so they backed out. Well, come to find out,
yes.
They're very sorry about that. And
it seems so.
They've decided to show how sorry they are to them, to the Louisiana Raging Cajuns football program, by giving them some money. This has been announced. That after playing in Lafayette in 2018, the Cajuns were scheduled to return the trip to Las Cruces in 2019, but the game was pushed back to 2020 for a scheduling conflict and then canceled due to COVID. There was a second home-and-home scheduled for 2023 in Lafayette and 2024, but New Mexico State joined Conference USA. You know they don't care for the Cajuns. Forcing more scheduling issues, and those games were never played. But according to FBSschedules.com, love the fact that they use helmets for their schedules. The Aggies will now pay Louisiana $225,000. That'll help with the renovation project there for Cajun Field. That's a nice little shot in the arm. And additionally, have scheduled a trip to Lafayette. Go ahead and mark it on your calendar for 2030.
Yeah, and so shout out to our guy too, FBSchedules.com, Kevin Kelly, who runs that. Like he is on top of all.
Oh, the man
stuff.
Is on a first name basis with the FBS Schedules guy.
Don't nice. Know him personally, but we've had some social media interactions. They've always been pleasant, but he's always on top of this type of stuff. So shout out to him. And so yeah, the Cajuns get a $225,000 payday. It's so funny how it was worded too. Like New Mexico State was like, if that money's not enough, we'll also come play you. Just please forgive us. Like I don't know. And again, I imagine. That was written. There's Sorry. Stuff like this written into the contract in the first place, and so I don't know. Maybe it was supposed to be a higher amount of money, and the Cajuns said, "If you come play us, well, you don't have to pay us as much." I don't know. Either way, New Mexico State canceled on the Cajuns, and there's some things that have to be paid up to rectify that because it was a contract that was signed by both sides. So
there you go. So
good
that,
day for Cajuns
so,
football.
Hey, good day. Get a little money into the athletics department. Always needed. For a group of five teams, so good for that. And they got an opponent on the schedule for,
for
6 years.
For a home game, and it sounds like they don't have to return the trip. So
yeah.
that's always nice.
Lovely,
well.
Lovely New
Las
Mexico.
Las Cruces.
Las Cruces, yes. Let's talk about our poll question, because we haven't been able to do a deep dive on that. We're going to do so with our buddy Les East coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes from right now from CrescentCitySports.com. You are listening to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. On ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
We say it a lot. Apparently need to say it a couple more times, but we got it.
So the poll question is, we're a week out from the draft. What do we think the Saints are going to do? What should they do, rather, right? And we've been talking beating the table, offensive tackle, because it's a fairly strong, top-heavy offensive tackle class this year. It's also a strong wide receiver class. And our buddy Luke Johnson, friend of the station, from NOLA.com and The Advocate, who covers the New Orleans Saints, has floated the idea of taking an offensive tackle in round one and then taking Keon Coleman in round number two. The Opelousas Catholic superstar turned Florida State monster, who reminds me of Anquan Boldin. I would love that, and I think that checks a lot of boxes. And we're all just locked in. Tackle, 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 tackle. Great. Okay. What if they don't take a tackle? Like,
no.
The Saints for many years have taken best player available. They do have that mentality, right? They have a very – their board is not very big. If you talk to folks that are around the Saints organization, you know, a lot of teams have a huge big board, right, of first-round talent and everything. The Saints board is usually smaller under with Jeff Ireland being there, and they usually have about 10 or so guys that they're looking at that they want to take. Now, I don't expect a run on offensive tackle in this draft. I expect teams to be desperate like the Raiders and the Broncos and Vikings to be trading up to try to get one of the quarterbacks that they'll overdraft or something else, which means if the Saints stay put, which they typically don't like to do, right? They like to trade up. If they stay put, they're going to get a pick of a slew of very good offensive tackle prospects. So it makes all the sense in the world, right? But what if Marvin Harrison Jr. has fallen to them? What if Brock Bowers has fallen to them? Weird things happen on the draft. They do. I think I am 90% sure that Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland and company are going to take an offensive tackle, the best one left on their board when they get to 14. I don't think they're going to trade up. I think they're going to let one of those tackles fall to them, and I think they're going to do the smart thing. That said, the draft does, you know, teams do weird things that forces you to adjust your draft approach because someone else did something stupid. It was always typically Al Davis and the Raiders in his later years.
There's no way.
What's wrong with Ray Guy?
I don't think there's even a chance in the world Harrison falls to 14. The Bowers situation, I think, is slightly worth exploring. And again, I would be okay. That's the guy I'd be okay with them skipping out on offensive line for. Now, it's still, is it the smart thing to do with the way your roster's currently constructed? No. I don't know, but again, sometimes, you know what's a really good plan to get better is drafting really good football players and taking players based on need. Now, I would say I think they've been a little bit more need-oriented in the first round. I think past the first, like when they picked Alvin Kamara, they had just signed Adrian Peterson and, you know, they had Mark Ingram and they still picked Kamara. I think past the first round, they have shown you that they'll go off the beaten path. They've typically still gone where they need to.
Right, and typically what they do in the first two rounds, because I did a story a few years ago about this, and I crunched the numbers. You would have been proud. It would have been a D-Lo type of story.
Oh, yes.
Of what the Saints typically do with their first two round picks. O-line, D-line, DB, wide receiver. That's what they do. That's what they like to do for the better part of 15-plus years now. That's what they draft in the first two rounds. Those are the premium positions that Mickey Loomis and his team around him prioritize more than any other position. O-line, D-line, DB, safety or corner, and wide receiver. So my question to you is this. I agree with you. But let's say Brock Bowers falls to them, and they can't pass up the opportunity to possibly get the next, like, Travis Kelce, Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Gates, legendary tight end, pass-catching tight end, right? Is the tackle class deep enough, in your opinion, for them to be able to get a reliable starting tackle in their second with their second-round pick?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that. And I haven't done enough tackle film analysis to really tell you, but I do feel comfortable.
Shame on you.
I know, that's on me. I do feel comfortable, though, with the top three guys, right? And if it's not necessarily the first one, even if it's not the man whose name is difficult to pronounce, right? And it falls into J.C. Latham territory. I feel good about the top two or three guys if they can't get the number one.
So which guy are you talking about? You're talking about the Penn State guy or the Washington guy?
Well, really both. I feel good about both. I don't necessarily feel the same way about, again, those when you're looking at receiver. I don't feel the same way about getting the second or third best receiver in that spot because I just don't think the need oriented enough. But when you talk about the tackles, I like the guys at the top. Now, in the second, are you talking about the fifth or sixth best tackle? Then I get worried, right?
Mm,
that you're going to ask that player to start. But at the same time, they've taken in their minds one of the best tackles available in the past with Penning, and it didn't work out. So
what if the Saints, hear me out here. You ready for it? What if the Saints behind the scenes believe that Trevor Penning's their starting left tackle?
You know who would be a good person to ask that? How about Les East on the other side of the
break? How about Les East? Let's ask him on the other side of the break. Because, look, they may believe that Trevor's the guy, and maybe they don't think they need to draft a left tackle. Just saying. Just saying. We'll take a timeout. More RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. Les East from Crescent City Sports is going to join us to talk Saints Talk Pels. That's next, right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, as you're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, as we broadcast live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. We brought it up as a little bit of a conversation last segment before we took that time out, but as we talked about the New Orleans Saints and their draft, as it's also our poll question of the day, let's get more into that. And who better to talk about the Saints and the Pelicans as they have a play-in tournament game tomorrow night against the Kings in the Smoothie King Center? Let's talk with Les East about both of those from Crescent City Sports. Les, how are you doing?
Doing well, guys. How are y'all doing?
Oh, we're doing absolutely fine on this Thursday afternoon. Les, I want to start with the Saints, and we know that we're a week away from the NFL draft, and there's quite a bit of talk of the Saints are going to take offensive tackle. They're going to take offensive tackle. They're going to take offensive tackle once again in the first round. But is there a specific guy that you look towards that the Saints are likely going to take? And if not, trade up to go get if they really feel like they need to, depending on if there's a run or not at that specific position?
No, I have not zeroed in on one guy at this point. It is a strong position in the draft, and I think there are multiple players that would be happy with where they're picking and perhaps even to trade up and go get one if they're just a couple of picks away and they don't think he'll last. But I know there is the tackle from Penn State is highly regarded. I don't know if he'll make it to where they are, so that would certainly be a possibility for them to make a move up if he's around 10 or 11 and they don't think he's going to last. But I think there are going to be multiple options at tackle, and I don't rule out another position, but I do think tackle is clearly the most likely direction that they will go.
Now, say Brock Bowers is available at 14. Do you think that they go away from their norm of getting the high-impact guys, the offensive linemen, the D-linemen, the corners, the wide receivers? Do you think they go away from that and actually take a tight end in Brock Bowers if he's still available?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume if Bowers lasts that long, which most people are not expecting, then he's probably going to be the highest guy on their board, in which case I think they would go with him because they prefer to pick the highest guy on their board, and he's supposed to be a once-in-a-generation talent. So I think he would be very hard to pass up, but again, it comes down to their own board. If they have him and a tackle who's available that are very close, I still think they would probably break the tie, so to speak, with the position of greater need, which would be tackle. But if Brock Bowers is there, I think they got to think long and hard about possibly grabbing him.
Interesting. Okay. And then with the Saints, you know that they have the first-round pick at number 14, and they usually try to trade up. But I'm almost wondering, how likely of a possibility is it that the Saints – stay at 14 and make a selection, but depending on what happens later in the first round, they trade number 45 and future picks in, say, next year's draft to trade back into the first round and go get someone else?
Oh, I think that's possible if the right person is there. You remember, I believe it was 2012 when they drafted Cam Jordan. They traded back into the first round to get Mark Ingram. So there's precedent for it. Certainly trading up is something they do at least once every year, it seems like, sometimes more than once. So if there's somebody there late in the first round that they really like, certainly trading back into the first is possible because, you know, that's the core – of their philosophy is you find a handful of guys or a little bit more that you really like, that you really want, and then you go get them. And if that means trading up and giving up future assets in order to get to the position to grab them, that's fine. You get the guys that you've settled on prior to the draft, if at all possible.
We're speaking with Les East of Crescent City Sports. Les, I want to switch over to the basketball there in the Crescent City with the New Orleans Pelicans now that their season is on the line tomorrow night. It was obviously a tough way to lose, especially with Zion getting hurt after going for 40 points, and now he's going to be out this week and potentially longer. That's where I want to start as well. Do you get any indication? I guess it's just scarred in my brain at this point. Reevaluated in 2 weeks is like a four-letter word to me. Do you think that there's a real chance that Zion is going to be truly reevaluated with a chance to play in 2 weeks? Or is this the Pelicans setting themselves up to push him along and not activate him until next season the way they did last year?
Well, I don't think he's going to be available until the conference semifinals, if they were to get that far. They said approximately 2 weeks, so they can fudge that one way or another. But it's extremely unlikely he would be available if they made it to the first round against Oklahoma City. The seventh game of that series would be, I believe, May 5th, which would put him slightly past 2 weeks. And reevaluation almost never means that they're going to be immediately activated. So, you know, they would have to win tomorrow night and then beat Oklahoma City, I think, for him to have any chance to come back and play again this season. So I think he's off the table indefinitely, and unless they make an improbable run here, he's not going to play again.
And do you think that the fact that he's now out, Brandon Ingram is still limited, it feels like, especially given Willie Green's choice not to play him there in crunch time against the Lakers, where does this team go in a must-win situation against Sacramento tomorrow? Do you think we see a bigger workload for Ingram, or are they just not going to rush that back?
No, I think Ingram will get a bigger workload. I'm at the facility now. In a few minutes, we're going to go over to practice and talk to Willie Green. But my assumption is that the reason Ingram sat that last 7.5 minutes, and McCollum, I think, would have sat the entire time if Williamson hadn't gotten hurt, is that the comeback was keyed by Williamson and Jose Alvarado and Trey Murphy and guys coming off the bench, and Ingram and McCollum were killing them by missing all of their shots. So I don't think that was injury or fatigue related in Ingram's case. I think Green was riding the unit that got him back in the game. He had said on Monday he expected Ingram to play more than he did on Sunday. His minutes only went up from 23 to 25. But I would think he would probably play 30 or more minutes tomorrow night because they're going to need him to be that primary scorer with McCollum helping out as well. But Ingram, I think, is going to have to kind of take on a lot of the leadership role and primary scoring role that Williamson has been handling for most of the season.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, Les, about that matchup with Sacramento, obviously the Pelicans have been very good against the Kings this season, 5-0 record. A lot of those games haven't been all that close. But Zion was a big factor in a lot of them. I mean, he played in all but one. What do you think the matchup looks like with him out of there? And I've been seeing Sacramento actually a 1.5-point favorite, which surprised me given the Pels are at home and have beaten this team 5 times.
Well, I wrote about this at CrescentCitySports.com yesterday. I mean, trying to figure this game out tomorrow night is almost impossible. Yeah, the Pelicans won all 5 meetings. They led by double figures and more, I mean, significant double figures in virtually every game. The one game Williamson didn't play in, they led by 50 and won by 33. So they still are in pretty good shape with this matchup, and yet the Kings have played really well their last 2 games. The Pelicans have played poorly their last 2 games. This is their first game adjusting to the absence of Williamson after he's carried them the last couple of months. So there are, I think, multiple reasons to think the Pelicans have the advantage, and there are multiple reasons to think the Kings have the advantage. And if you ask me what is ultimately going to happen, my answer would be I have no idea.
We're wrapping up our conversation with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. He joins us here on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. If the Pellies don't get it done tomorrow night in the Smoothie King Center and they fail to get into the playoffs, what type of changes are going to be needed this offseason, if any at all, in your opinion, Les?
Well, I think there will be a very thorough evaluation with the recognition that something has to be done. Now, I think Jonas Valanciunas is going to be a free agent. As valuable as he is, obviously there are certain matchups, one being the Lakers, where he's a liability and they don't have the size behind him, as good as Larry Nance Jr. is. They don't have the size behind Valanciunas to have real good options when they decide to go away from him. So I think they have to look at the center position in terms of maybe moving on from Valanciunas and also getting more depth there in terms of size. I don't see anything happening with the big three. I don't see anything happening with the young players. I think they're happy with that core. But I think they got to look at the center position, and they're probably going to have to do that even if they win tomorrow and keep playing for a little while.
Besides the center position, do you believe that they'll go into next season and still trying to execute things the way that they're doing with not really having a traditional or even a modern-day point guard?
Well, that's something else I think they would have to evaluate. You know, for the most part, they can get by in games with McCollum, who's not a traditional point guard. Ingram can initiate the offense. Williamson is unique in how he handles the point forward position. So they don't have to have a traditional point guard for about 45 minutes or 44 minutes in a game. But when you get into big games that mean a lot and every possession is maximized in the last 3 or 4 minutes, that's when it shows up. And so I think they need to look at the possibility of bringing in a traditional point guard, even if it's a veteran backup that they can count on, you know, in crunch time, to go more conventional rather than blowing up the roster and trying to get an elite point guard. So there are a couple of ways they can address that, and I think that's something that will be on the table.
Les, always appreciate your time and your analysis, brother. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to us. Enjoy the play-in game tomorrow night, my friend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks, guys.
That's Les East of CrescentCitySports.com joining us here on RP3 D'Lo Mesh, talking Saints, talking Pels. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll give you an update on the poll and close out today's show and get you set up for the Jordy Holtberg Show. That's all next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station and your home for the LSU Tigers.
Wrapping up this Thursday edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as you're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station, giving you one more update for this edition of the show on our poll question of the day. Now that we're 1 week away from the NFL draft, what do you think the Saints will do with that first round pick? There's been a little bit of movement, but still a heavy, heavy majority of the votes at 89% have said offensive tackle. 7% have said other, 4% have said wide receiver, and still no votes for the defensive line. We did get a couple comments. Ralph had said offensive tackle, unless Brock Bowers falls to 14, then I think the value would be too good to pass up. Then John Paul had said, from what I've seen, the answer is offensive line. This is also a fairly deep offensive line group, so possibly first and second round. A little bit of a double dip like we had seen last year with the Saints doing that with the defensive line, when they took Brian Brzee and then took Isaiah Foskey in the second round.
I pretty much agree with Ralph. Offensive tackle, unless Brock Bowers is there, and that changes things. Obviously, if something wild happens and you have Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers or something like that, then yeah, you can start to consider those situations. I don't think those are even possible. And I ultimately think we don't have to worry about the Brock Bowers thing. I don't think he falls that far anyway. And look, there's situations. I once upon a time, I'll admit, here's one I was wrong about. I wanted Reuben Foster to fall. He fell. Saints didn't take him, and he ended up being not a very good player in the NFL. So those situations can happen. I'd be shocked if Brock Bowers again. Like I've listened to a lot of professional opinions on Brock Bowers from people in the draft industry, people in the college football industry, people in the NFL. I haven't heard anyone who doesn't think he's going to be an elite NFL player. The interesting thing, the only counterpoint about Brock Bowers is Kyle Pitts. But I do think the difference is, A, Kyle Pitts went to a team that didn't want to use him, and we'll see how he thrives in a new system now that Atlanta's moved on from Arthur Smith. And B, Kyle Pitts, I think, wasn't the same type of player that Bowers is. I think he was more of that receiver archetype in a tight end's body, whereas I think Bowers has the skill set to do both. I think he could play on the outside and be a really good receiver if he wanted to. I think he could also line up and block really effectively as well, which he did for Georgia at times. So I would love Bowers on my team. It's one of those things, it's a little bit similar to Brian Branch last year. Not the same, because it's not the same caliber player. But it's like, I don't care if the value isn't what you think it should be in this spot. He's that good of a football player, and he will make your team better. And that's why the Lions got mocked for what they did last year. But I think in large, you know, quantities, it worked out for them, and it got them all the way to the NFC Championship game in some ways as well. So that's where I am a week away from the draft. Offensive tackle, unless it's Bowers.
Offensive tackle, unless it's Bowers. I like that. That's fine. That's fine. I like that. I wouldn't be surprised, just throwing it out there, if they feel like, because they haven't brought back Andres Pete yet either, right, and depth has been a problem the last couple of years across the offensive line, and you don't know how much left you got in Ryan Ramczyk, I wouldn't be surprised if you see them take another offensive lineman in the second round either. Wouldn't surprise me. Really wouldn't.
Could be.
Could be. What you going to do with the rest of your day, bud? You already got that column written. Yep. That's going to be coming up. Tell the folks again about this column that you wrote masterfully.
It's called Why the Astros Shouldn't Panic Yet.
Boom.
And it'll be out in about, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, 30 minutes or so.
Amazing.
I'm going to work on, finalize all that. I will, tonight, it's going to be interesting, too. It's kind of a calm before the storm situation. You got a lot of NBA stuff, a big weekend in college baseball, college softball as well. So there's going to be a lot going on. But tonight, I don't know, not a massive day in the sports calendar.
You got to recharge those batteries, bud.
Yeah, that'll be the goal. That'll be the goal.
That's what you got.
Also got to do Cleats and Sneaks is about to drop the latest edition. Got to talk with Ross Jackson yesterday about the Saints, and we had also brought up Brock Bowers as a potential situation. You'll be able to hear his thoughts about all that and more on the latest edition of Cleats and Sneaks on YouTube.
Tomorrow we'll be back over at Walk-Ons, of course. It's Friday. We'll take this show on the road as we've done so often of late. We've got a couple really big-timers. How about Evan Cohen? You hear him on the morning show on our airwaves. We will talk with Evan about the NFL draft. We'll have maybe a little Brett Shancy Astros. We'll see if his mental state's high enough to come on with us based on the state of the franchise. And then Jake Madison, big-time preview of the Pels play-in game against Sacramento, and maybe talk about some of those long-term questions with Zion on the rest of the roster as well.
Oh, it's going to be tremendous. We'll be back on tomorrow, 11 to 1, live from Walk-Ons on Collie Saloon. But until then, be safe out there. Be kind to one another. The Jordy Holtberg Show with the Blonde Bomber himself, Uncle Jordy. Up next right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.